Cloudflare story has 534 upvotes and carries a tone of controlled frustration in the comments. The TellHN post from user Stagas reports that when you transfer name server control to Cloudflare, the company silently injects its own analytics beacon, specifically the Cloudflare Insights script, into HTTP responses, without clearly disclosing this in the onboarding flow. For developers who have carefully constructed content security policies to prevent third-party script injection, this is not a minor issue.
It's worth being precise about what's happening technically, because inject is a loaded word. Cloudflare is operating at the network layer. They're not modifying your source files. But because they're serving as your DNS resolver, and in many cases terminating SSL, they have the ability to modify responses in transit. That's a capability they've disclosed exists for their caching and optimization features. The question is whether using that capability to add analytics, which benefits Cloudflare's data collection, is within the reasonable scope of what customers consented to.
And the answer, based on the HN thread, is that the community considers it not to be. There are several comments from users who only discovered this by running network analysis on their own sites after wondering why their content security policy logs were generating unexpected violations. You shouldn't need to forensically investigate your network traffic to discover what your infrastructure provider is doing to your responses.
The business logic from Cloudflare's side is understandable. They have a free tier that millions of sites depend on, and the analytics data they collect from sites running that free tier presumably has commercial value. But there's a meaningful difference between "we show ads on our dashboard" and "we silently attach monitoring code to your users' traffic." The disclosure gap is the problem.
Protobuf getting LSP support is a quieter story, but a genuinely welcome one for anyone working with gRPC or protocol buffers at scale. The language server protocol gives you IDE integration, autocomplete, go-to definition, inline type checking, and for Protobuf specifically, the absence of good LSP support has been a persistent friction point because protofiles can get complex and there's no native way to verify cross-file consistency without the full build chain. Buff's implementation looks solid based on the 109 comments, which are largely constructive rather than critical.
GIMP's development update has 198 points and 146 comments, which is a lot of engagement for what might seem like routine project news. The reason is context. GIMP has been criticized for years as being perpetually 1 year away from a major architecture overhaul that would make it competitive with professional-grade tools on Linux. The August 2026 update signals genuine progress on Jeagle integration and a UI redesign that the project has been promising for several release cycles. The HN community's investment in GIMP is partly ideological. They want the open-source image editor to succeed, and partly practical.
The GIMP thread has a recurring thread of tension between users who want GIMP to become more like Photoshop and users who argue that trying to clone Photoshop's interaction model is precisely what has held the project back. There's a third camp arguing for GIMP to develop its own coherent design language rather than chasing or avoiding any specific commercial product. The development update doesn't fully resolve that debate, but it suggests the core team has a direction.
Then there's the retro computing corner, which Hacker News always handles with particular warmth. AGI 64 bringing Sierra Adventures to the Commodore 64 scored 95 points. AGI was Sierra's adventure game interpreter, the engine that ran King's Quest, Space Quest, Police Quest, and someone has done the remarkable work of porting enough of that runtime to the C64 to run actual Sierra game content. The constraints involved are extraordinary. The C64 has 64 kilobytes of addressable RAM, and Sierra's AGI games were designed for machines with considerably more headroom.
The DigiComp 1 video is also delightful, a plastic mechanical computer from 1963 that performs Boolean logic operations through physical ball bearings and plastic toggles, no electronics at all. It's a genuine computational artifact, and watching it execute operations makes the abstract nature of Boolean logic suddenly very concrete. For anyone who teaches digital logic or knows someone learning it, that video is worth 20 minutes of explanation.
Clamiga is another retro computing story, common Lisp for the Amiga. The Amiga had a cult following for good reason, and there's a community that is still actively developing for it. Clamiga is a functioning Common Lisp implementation that runs on Amiga hardware, which is technically impressive given the platform constraints and the relative complexity of implementing a full Lisp runtime.
And Gakuten Soku, which only has three comments but a compelling subject. It's Japan's first robot, built in 1928, a remarkable piece of early robotics history that most people haven't encountered. The Wikipedia article is genuinely worth reading as a reminder that the aspiration to build autonomous machines is much older than the modern AI conversation suggests.
The Desktop Colors Museum, desktopcolors.com, is exactly what it sounds like, a curated collection of the default solid background colors from classic operating systems. Windows 95's default teal, Workbench blue from the Amiga, the specific shade of gray that early Macintosh used. It's nostalgic and also surprisingly moving as a record of the visual aesthetic choices that define generations of computing experience.
Someone in the comments called it the Pantone book for people who grew up with 4-bit color palettes, which is accurate and charming.